on the morning of Tuesday, the 14th of July, 1789, a massive crowd, having raided the Royal Arsenal at Les Invalides, marched through the Faubourg Saint-Antoine towards the forbidding walls of the Bastille. The Bastille was as much a symbol as a building. A medieval fortress with a fearsome reputation as a prison for political dissidents, it was in reality all but decommissioned. On the 14th of July, it held only 7 inmates, including a handful of forgers and a man who thought he was Julius Caesar. A couple of weeks earlier, it had also held the Marquis de Sade. To the crowds who converged on it that morning, however, it remained the embodiment of the arbitrariness of royal power. Just as important, it had 250 barrels of gunpowder in its cellars. What would later be seen as an epic battle between the people and the forces of the old regime was a confused affair of mutual suspicions and misread signals, resulting in perhaps hundreds of deaths. Delegates from the Hôtel de Ville negotiated with the prison governor inside, while outside the crowd, augmented by defecting soldiers, tried to interpret the movements of cannon on the battlements, growing momently more nervous and impatient. As in many a later confrontation, no one knew who fired the first shots. But by late afternoon, the garrison surrendered, and the crowd rushed into the Bastille, liberating prisoners and gunpowder alike. The unfortunate governor was lynched and decapitated, his head paraded on a pike through cheering crowds in a grotesque carnival of retribution. It might have been happening in a different world from the constitutional deliberations of the deputies 12 miles away in Versailles. Later that night, a courtier woke the king with the news. "Is it a rebellion?" Louis is said to have asked. "No, sire," came the reply. "It is a revolution." Unable to rely on the loyalty of his own troops, Louis had no choice. In a personal appearance before the assembly, he announced the soldiers' withdrawal. On the 16th of July, he recalled Necker, and on the 17th he left Versailles for Paris. Here he processed through crowd-lined streets to the Hôtel de Ville, where he was welcomed on behalf of the Commune by Bailly, now mayor of Paris, and Lafayette, the aristocratic hero of the American War of Independence, and now head of the National Guard. Bailly offered the king the revolutionary tricolour cockade, whose blue, white, and red adorn the French flag to this day. Louis placed it in his hat and appeared on the balcony to wild cheers from the crowds below. But the celebrations were short-lived. A few days later, the intendant of Paris, Berthier de Sauvigny, was caught trying to join the first wave of old regime émigrés now fleeing the country. He and his father-in-law were lynched by the mob, and their heads paraded on pikes. The genie of popular revolution was out of the bottle, and it was not to be put back so easily. As in Paris, so in the rest of the nation. In the days that followed, towns throughout France replaced their authorities with new revolutionary bodies. Meanwhile, the countryside was seized with a near hysterical terror of aristocratic reaction, known to history as the Great Fear. With grain in short supply, rumours of an orchestrated famine plot swept through region after region. Brigands hired by the aristocracy were said to be roaming the land in murderous gangs. Nervous peasants launched preemptive attacks on nobles and their property. Day by day, the revolution of the people and the revolution of the Constituent Assembly were moving further and further apart. With the country sliding towards anarchy, the deputies at Versailles knew they had to do something dramatic to close the gap. Accordingly, on the 4th of August, at the instigation of a caucus of representatives from Brittany, two aristocrats, including one of France's richest men, the Duc d'Aiguillon, stood up before the assembly to propose the abolition of all feudal dues and privileges. What followed, the celebrated night of the 4th of August, was one of the most extraordinary events of the entire revolution. Deputy after deputy, noblemen, clergymen, representatives of towns throughout France, stepped forward to renounce their privileges in a frenzy of competitive self-denial. One of those present described it as a kind of patriotic intoxication. By the time dawn broke over Versailles, the Assembly had, in the words of its subsequent decree, destroyed the feudal system in its entirety. In the course of a single night, it had dismantled the foundations of privilege on which the order of the monarchy had rested for centuries. 3 weeks later, on the 26th of August, the Assembly issued its Declaration of the Rights of Man and the Citizen, a ringing affirmation that men are born and remain free and equal in rights, and that the source of all sovereignty resides essentially in the nation. It was the preamble to the new constitution, now to be forged in earnest. The ground had been cleared. The rebuilding could begin. Or could it? The deputies now found themselves in a chicken-and-egg dilemma. The old order had to approve their changes before the new order could proceed. The decree and declaration needed the assent of the king. It was an assent Louis was in no mood to give. But once again, as with the events at the Bastille, people power would force his hand. The October days would finish what those heady July days had begun. Throughout September, while the Assembly pondered the constitutional niceties of the king's veto, the mood on the streets of Paris grew even uglier. With grain short and bread prices rising, the National Guard was at full stretch against attacks on bakeries and grain convoys. Marie Antoinette may not have responded with the legendary, "Let them eat cake," but in such an atmosphere her husband's apparent reluctance to endorse the will of the people still provoked angry questions. Why should the king have a veto at all? Why wasn't he in Paris, where he belonged, and where he could be sheltered from evil influences? And why had he summoned one of his crack regiments to Versailles? Then, at the beginning of October, rumours began to spread of a scandalous banquet at the palace, where the arriving troops, egged on by the queen and her coterie, were said to have insulted the national cockade. It was the final straw. On the morning of the 5th, a huge crowd of working women burst into the Hôtel de Ville, demanding bread and searching for arms. They then set off to march on Versailles, gathering support and a daunting assortment of weaponry on the way. By the evening, when they stormed into the Assembly and surrounded the palace, the crowd was some 7,000 strong and included many men. Meanwhile, a detachment of some 20,000 National Guards, under the reluctant leadership of Lafayette, had also left Paris for Versailles, aiming to persuade the king to return to the capital. Louis received deputations from the Parisian women and Lafayette,